Now am I wrong for trying to reach the place that I can't see? One Mississippi, two Mississippi. Good morning and welcome to Innovation 204, the Internet, the Things of the Internet of Things. My name is Bryn Lewis. I work for Wynyard Group in Christchurch. I work for two parts of the company. One part of the company does risk management for large corporates, and the other does software for detecting the financing of terrorism and money laundering. My presentation is not about my job. The other 8 hours of my working week, I work for companies like Hamilton Jet on the very large jet boat engine controllers. These have a nozzle as tall as me and are powered by a 1500 Caterpillar diesel motor. I work for Sensing City, which is an organisation which is looking to equip Christchurch with a smart grid of sensors dotted all over the business, monitoring sewers, water consumption, power consumption. The events of the last few years have provided Christchurch with a unique opportunity. So, the clicker's not working. So, today's presentation, we're going to talk a bit about the Internet of Things, the devices, building software for these devices, interfacing and connecting sensors to these devices, then connecting these devices up into the cloud, look at some applications you can build for these devices, and then take some questions. The growth is phenomenal of the Internet of Things. There are people lining up at the trough looking to get some of the 1.x or 2.x billion dollars. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi, five Mississippi. There are now 500 additional devices attached to the Internet of Things. It will continue growing, and by the year 2020, it is projected there will be 7 or 8 devices per person on the planet. My house currently has just a few more devices than that, but I would consider myself a bit of an outlier. The importance of this technology can't be underestimated. We're all looking at moving to electric and other alternate fuel-powered vehicles. When was the last power station built in New Zealand? I think it was most probably Clyde, built when I was a kid. Since then, Meridian Energy have managed to make another 800 megawatts of generation via efficiencies of their existing plant. We've got to figure out better ways of utilising the capacity that we got. We're moving to a hybrid model with wind, wave, hydro, and hopefully not too much fossil-fueled generation. We've got sensor arrays like the ones we're talking about building in Christchurch. In the case of my previous project, layering accelerometers through buildings and over the Canterbury Plains, looking at how an earthquake fault wave moves across the plains. How humans will interact with the systems and not actually realise that they're interacting with the system at all. The technology is just ambient and around you. It detects that you're there and adjusts the environment to suit your personal preferences. This approach has been enabled by the delivery of a couple of key components. In the cloud, we've got big data. People are now ingesting petabytes and terabytes of data. The sensor data that is being created is just phenomenal. I use a free source to store my data on the internet, and we've uploaded 10 megs a day from just one sensor streaming up data about its environment. Light levels, noise levels, pollution levels, temperature and humidity. Microsoft has the Intelligent System Service, which is a bit of an IKEA project, some assembly required. It's a series of libraries and code to allow you to build your own Internet of Things solutions. If we get enough time, I've got an example to show, a sample application which shows uploading data from a Fez Spider to the Azure service bus. It's quite possible, but it does take a wee bit of work. Critical thing in this environment, which is often ignored, is security. Embedded developers can be a bit cash about this. I expect that the opening salvos of any major conflict coming up will be taken on the internet. The opposing parties will endeavor to disable each other's critical infrastructure. SCADA systems will be attacked. which control water, sewage, power. Other infrastructure will be attacked from the internet. For example, Niwa's supercomputer in Wellington was not that long ago hacked by foreign agents. New Zealand is not immune to this. How many of you are at the keynote? Did you like Mr. Whitaker's talk about the hot tub? Right. So, based on Mr. Whitaker, my aim as an innovation speaker is to inspire you to do some epic shit. So, Mr. Whitaker's hot tub. This got me thinking. It struck me that Mr. Whitaker's hot tub was most probably connected to the internet via Wi-Fi. How many of you have been to Kirk Jackson's presentations about hacking? So, I parked my nondescript van outside Mr. Whitaker's place with an evil twin Wi-Fi access point in it. Mr. Whitaker goes away on holiday. I take control of his hot tub. What can I do with a hot tub? I thought, well, I could open the lid, pretty boring. I could put enough bromide in it that next time he jumps in, he'd come out blonde. Be a giggle, but how about we boil it? It's got an element, it's full of water. I did the maths. Four-person hot tub contains roughly 1,000 litres of water. It takes 4.186 kilojoules of energy to raise 1 kg of water 1 degree centigrade. The normal operating temperature of a spa pool is about 38 degrees, so we need to elevate it to 100 degrees, so that's a 62 degree increase. So 62 times 1,000 times 4.186 is 259,500 kilojoules, or 259.5 megajoules. That's converted to kilowatt hours, is 72 kilowatt hours. A spa pool has a 6 kilowatt heater. We could most probably, assuming that the plumbing didn't melt or something didn't give up, boil the spa pool in just over 12 hours. The next person to jump into it would be having a very bad day. Even a light simmer would most probably be fairly uncomfortable. So, devices. My kind of devices don't have an operating system. They don't run Linux, they don't run Windows, they don't run VxWorks, they don't run an operating system at all. They usually sit either down on the silicon, or in the case of the .NET framework, run inside a little bootable VM. They haven't got a lot of processing power, tens of megahertz, and not a lot of storage, most probably Ks of RAM and EEPROM. They're running off batteries or off solar power, so we're not going to have a multi-core 3.5 gigahertz processor grinding away, processing JPEG images. They've got limited connectivity. New Zealand is at the end of a very long, high latency, high jitter pipe. I work with mobile devices, GPRS modems. If you initiate an HTTP request from a GPRS modem in Ponsonby, as I found, it takes roughly 300 milliseconds to get a reply. If you haven't thought it through and have not pre-authed your 401 challenge data, it takes you 600 milliseconds. The company I work for processes vouchers for beer. People get a bit antsy if you make them wait at the till for a while. You've got to really focus on the environment you're working in. You've got devices which are sitting on customers' premises. If you get people like me, they pull them apart, see how they work. I dismantled my ID badge. I had to get another one. It's amazing what you can do with a knife. You borrow a knife from your table when you're having tea, go back to your room and pull your ID tag apart to see what's inside it. This is what I hope my kids do. I want my kids to be able to open things up and figure out how they work. I want them to understand technology. It's important that we don't just consume technology, but we at least have a basic understanding of the fundamentals. These devices, you can secure them. There are specialized pieces of hardware for storing crypto keys, configuration data, settings. Some people block their devices in epoxy. The pin pads, I think, are done like that. A mate of mine had to reverse engineer a system which involved drilling holes through the epoxy after x-raying it so he could get oscilloscope probes onto tracks. Do not to paraphrase George Bush, do not misunderestimate the determination of your opposition to reverse engineer your hardware. The company I previously worked for sold equipment into Asia. We found that one of our resellers was taking our gear apart and slicing the transformers up with diamond tip saws to figure out how we made them. These devices are operating in a hostile environment. It's not a temperature and humidity controlled data center. There's dust, there's vibration. One of my other systems got taken out by a big seagull poo on the solar panel. You've got to deal with stuff that you don't have to deal with on the web, and it's just different. It's not better or worse, it's just different. The whole environmental thing is what trips a lot of people up. I worked on a system for tracking buses in Christchurch, and we found that in summer the systems started dying. The bus systems would just stop working and not reporting their position, and we had no idea why, till one of our guys went down to the bus station and looked. What happens is the top of a bus is either black or white, so it gets quite hot. We had a GPS unit sitting on top of the bus. The air inside the GPS unit expanded. Then they drove the bus through a bus wash, which sprayed cold water all over the bus. The air inside the GPS unit contracted, sucking water inside the GPS unit. Rinse and repeat over a week or two, and this kit died. Stuff blindsides you. In the bus system, we had things for automatically opening the doors. One cold morning, there was fog on the sensors and they didn't work. You have to really think outside the square. So, I'm focusing on the hobbyist-focused devices. These devices are cheap as chips. The Arduino is totally open source. The circuit diagrams, the circuit board designs, the bootloader, the IDE, and all of the plumbing that goes with it are all open source. You can download it. You can build your own, and people do. They range in price from $25 up to $60 or even $110 if you get one of the Flash ones, which runs Linux. So it's C++. It's fairly butch to program, because when stuff goes wrong, it goes spectacularly wrong. It uses a wrapper around the standard C++ libraries. It has a setup function and a main loop, and it executes these, and then when you do your build process, it generates C code to wrap around those to call your functionality. There's a lot of peripherals available for it. The sort of devices we're talking about, you program them with this sort of thing. We've got joysticks, GPS units, LCD screens, and I'll be looking later on at a power consumption monitor. You can control motors, lights, 3G modems, 2.5G modems, other sorts of wireless links. They're really popular with the maker community. How many of you have heard of the maker community? Cool. So MakeZine, MakerShed, basically it's learning how to use technology to build stuff that interests you. I was looking at a video, my kids watch the documentary channel on Sydney Morning Herald, and they were talking to these people who were building a fire-spitting dragon for the Burning Man Festival, and it was controlled by an Arduino. And I thought, that's pretty cool. They were consuming vast amounts of propane and shooting jets of flame out its nose, which were like 6 feet long. I'm thinking, that's an excellent use for computing. It's also used in commercial products. This is one of the sensors that we use for Christchurch City. It's got sensors for light levels, pollution, humidity, and noise. It was stuck on my back fence for a while, and when I was testing it, I learned a lot about how invasive to your privacy they are. You could tell when my kids got home because it was next to the trampoline, and at sort of 3:10, there'd be a spike as they were scrapping and fighting on the trampoline. So, general takeaway from this slide is it's 16 megahertz, not a lot of RAM, but every CPU cycle counts. You've got a lot of I/O points on some of these devices, and you can drive these I/O quite efficiently. Toggling an output doesn't take a lot of CPU processing, do some simple processing of some analog inputs. It's great. My kids play with these devices. We even use them for teaching programming to high school students. They come in different form factors. This is one of the smallest ones I've got. I'm not putting it under the document camera, but That device is just a little bit bigger than a stamp. It runs a 16 megahertz processor, and the thing sticking out the side is a wireless link. I'll just pop this into the audience and you can pass it around. It's got three or four I/O points, can do a I2C input, an analog input, and a digital input. They're $15 US. We were joking about embedding one inside a ball and tossing it into the audience and seeing what the telemetry data was as the ball bounced around the room. I program Arduino devices commercially, but for a hobby and for teaching, I use the .NET micro framework. The .NET micro framework requires a little bit more power. 32-bit processor with no memory management unit. It will run in 64K of RAM and a quarter of a mega flash. How many of you remember the Spot watch? Oh, no one. One. I've seen one. There was a guy at TechEd 2012 who had one. I was amazed. It was not as hideous as you might have expected. And you programmed it with .NET and it downloaded into it. The great thing about it was that it also had a broadcast system where they broadcast news and weather as well. It was shut down in 2012. No one bought one. That's why everything in the .NET micro framework is often prefixed by Spot, which was the smart personal object technology. So, the .NET micro framework is fast, but it's not real time. It's always interpreted. In effect, it's a bootable runtime. Comes up, starts running, and has access to a file system, but it doesn't run on top of the file system. It was open sourced in 2009. So if you're feeling butch, you can download a copy of the C and C++ code and port it to your own microprocessor. There was a project out to port it to the Raspberry Pi hardware. I had a look at it and thought that could be quite interesting. Some of these devices have a surprising amount of processing power and can even drive cameras and screens and monitors. The IDE is free. It's Visual Studio Express. Unlike a lot of products, the .NET integration components work with all of the Express products. Just go to the website and download Visual Studio Express 2012 for desktops. Don't download the latest because the .NET micro framework tooling tends to lag slightly behind the pace of the mainstream products. There are three or four companies building these devices. There's Secret Labs, who build the Netduino, GHI, who build the Spider devices, the Fez Spider devices, which supposedly stands for freaking easy, but I'll let you work out the rest. These devices have a hardware abstraction layer which isolates the bootable code from the physical hardware, and then a platform abstraction layer which isolates the device drivers from the implementation on the hardware. And then on top of that, you write managed drivers which communicate with the hardware drivers to talk to devices like accelerometers and displays. You'll do maybe 30 or 40,000 reads a second of an analog input, more for a digital input. It has a garbage collector, but it's a mark and sweep garbage collector, so it's not as flash as the server or desktop ones. You have to be careful that you don't give it a caning by allocating memory. So often you find yourself creating objects at startup time and then referring through them throughout your application's execution. It's multi-threaded, and it has aggressive sleep capability. So if you're building a solar-powered or battery-powered system, you can start your program, wire up a bunch of event handlers, and then put it all to sleep. And then when an input comes in from a sensor, it will wake the device up and start processing the data. So Netduino 2 is my current fave device. It's got a 2 gig SD card, 100 megabit LAN, whole bunch of I/O. The Fez Raptor, they seem to like their dinosaur names, 400 megahertz, it'll drive a reasonably good screen. It even supports WPF. You don't have a design canvas experience, you have to manually create the layouts. So it's sort of back to the 80s, but it works. I've built a couple of apps using for biomedical applications using these sort of devices. They've got similar levels of I/O and connectivity as the Arduino, and some of them have even got real-time clock, which is important, particularly if you're trying to do secure comms with SSL. So let's have a look at building code. 7, my laptop. So this is the Arduino IDE. It's an attractive beast. It's great. It's free. And people build custom IDEs for their own solutions. So let's have a look at building the code. You can see it's now spinning up the vendor's C and C++ compilers. We're going to download via this cable to this device here. 8. So in a moment, you'll see that the LED on top of the board is flashing, which is great. It means my code is downloaded. If we now flip back, this is how you debug a device. Serial printf. It's back to the 70s. You get used to it. Makes it hard, because in the process of writing this data out the debugging port, you change things. So you spend a lot of time dealing with Heisenberg bugs. It works really well as long as you're not pushing it too hard. So that's the basics of Arduino development. We can get a bit smarter with our code. There's a plugin available for Visual Studio from a company called Visual Micro, which gives you basic debugging and tracing capability. So we'll download that. You actually set it up like this. You can give breakpoints, and you can display, you'll see the count equals question mark means I can actually reach in and change that value on the fly. So we'll just download that to the device. You've even got F5 run and go capability. So we'll flip to the camera. And you'll see that the speed of LED flashing has changed. Now we'll flip back to the laptop. And you'll see that it's now stopped on my breakpoint. The data is 2. And every time I run, it changes. Then I can dive in and change it. And this is actually a half-decent debugging and development experience. And for $29, it's well worth it. If we were more honest as developers, we'd recognize the time that we spend debugging. I spend a lot more time debugging my code than I am. Well, I have now publicly admitted. The thing with embedded devices is you do a lot of pre-bugging. You put breakpoints on all over your code and make sure these breakpoints get hit. Because for a device like the one that's making its way around the room, there is no Windows update. You have to visit it to fix it. These devices are bolted on power poles about 3 meters up with a spiky thing wrapped around the power pole to stop people climbing up and getting them. You can remotely reset them with a great big magnet on the end of a pole, but no Windows update. The NetMF development environment is great. So I've got a combined project here. We'll just stop the debugging, pull the cable out. It's madness up here on the stage. I have so much gear. Basically, there's the devices on the projector, and then there's devices to about here. So if we get rid of that screen, fire up the Netduino app, it all runs inside Visual Studio. It's great. We're now downloading to the device over a USB cable, and we can whack a breakpoint in. There's the device rebooting. We're now downloading the binaries. And we've hit the breakpoint. It's got all of the debugging functionality that you expect. We can advance and continue. It's not got quite the full featured processing capability, but you can do a fair bit in there. We can add watches, we can do quick watches and so forth. So that's Arduino, NetMF, and then there's another layer on top of that, which is the Gadgeteer. So the Gadgeteer platform originally spun out of Microsoft Research in the late 2000s. The Gadgeteer platform was to allow them to do Internet of Things research with tools that they had floating around. There's actually a design surface, which is what it's taking so long to load. So the great thing about the Gadgeteer platform is, if you want to add another LED, you just scroll down the list, grab a multicolor LED, drop it onto the design surface, choose connect all, and it wires it up for you. Then you can click on the thing and it will tell you how much power your circuit is going to use. There aren't that many vendors of this. It's a bit of an orphan, but it's quite cool and it's great for teaching. I have a box full of stuff at home which I've bought and found it doesn't work with the Netduino. I also have another box which is the stuff which the smoke has been let out of, where I've got it horribly wrong. How many of you went to the Galileo platform chat a couple of days ago? Have any of you got a Galileo? The version 1 ones, if you plug them in the wrong order, you stood a reasonably good chance of smoking them up, which worried me. One day I wasn't thinking, I just plugged it in and thought, oh God, I've killed it. But so far, so good. The instructions for downloading Windows onto one of the Linux Galileo platform devices are pretty heinous. I looked at them, thought, oops, that's a job for after TechEd. Their spider platform is great. I'll just flip to the camera so you can see them. You basically plug it together. It's got LAN connectivity. There's the multicolored LED and buttons and joysticks. Works really well. I've got, I did a medical application with that device with a finger stall which did blood oxygenation levels and your pulse rate, which was pretty cool. So back to the slides. The automagic wiring is quite good as well. The Arduino devices are quite sensitive to what ports you use, the Netduino devices are quite sensitive to which port you use. The SPI port is basically 10, 11, and 13, whereas on the Arduino you can move your port assignments around. The Automagic designer makes it hard to screw up. So, connecting devices to our sensors. We've got digital inputs, digital outputs. They work pretty well. You've just got to be careful about current and voltage considerations. The Netduino is a 3.3 volt device, whereas most of the Arduinos are 5 volt devices, so if you feed too big a voltage in for too long, you can let the smoke out. In the Arduino world, you use interrupt service routines. The .NET micro framework in Netduino is multi-threaded, and you've got events. So you hook an event up to a sensor and process some data. The digital outputs are pretty robust. You can drive an LED, basically, off them. Analog inputs and outputs, you've got reading them as integers or reading them as floats. Often, though, it's unpleasant to process the data, you read them as integers because it's a bit faster. You can do 35,000 reads a second, which you need for something like this, which is going to be one of my demos later. This box has a clamp around the phase wire and a hairdryer plugged into it. In Code Club, one of the projects we build is a power consumption meter for your home. We've got PWM outputs. This is pulse width modulation. Rather than varying the voltage, we vary how long the output is on for. You turn something on and off 1,000 times a second and have it on for 50% of the time, that's a 50% duty cycle. The motor runs at half power. It's really useful for driving electric motors because it increases the stall torque significantly. We've got the SPI bus, the serial peripheral interconnect. It lets you wire serial devices into a microcontroller. You select them with a digital output, which can cause you problems because you might run out of digital outputs or you might find two shields which use the same digital output to turn themselves on and off. In that case, you use a thing called a transmogry shield, which lets you patch wires around, and it makes it incredibly sensitive. You pick it up and suddenly everything stops working. The I2C bus is the integrated circuit bus. It is a multi-drop serial bus where the devices are addressed by the header of the payload. SPI and I2C are really popular because they decrease the number of tracks on the circuit board and decrease the number of solder joints. This decreases the cost for the manufacturers and decreases the incidence of failure. The I2C bus is used for things like accelerometers, how many have got a cell phone which changes the screen orientation. That's done with a MEMS device, a MEMS accelerometer, talking SPI to the ARM-based microcontroller in your phone. We've got serial bus for talking to peripherals like RFID tag readers. The device which was going to navigate around the room was going to have an RFID tag reader on it, and I was going to harvest all of your wristbands for differently gold purposes. But I found that the RFID tag reader was just a little bit fragile. It's got a wire hoop, and I couldn't figure a way of packaging it without it being really obvious. I don't know what it is, but I walked out of that hacking presentation and thought, yep, that's interesting, and then tried the door to the services room next to the downstairs exit of the Sky City Casino. Thought you could wreak havoc in somewhere like this. A mate of mine worked on a System 4 here at Sky. It's fully integrated with the players card system, and he was working on improving the performance of their SQL database so that people could use their player card points to exit the parking building and pay for their bill, because they'd had problems with people spending all of their money and then relying on their players card points to get out, but not actually having them made their way to the Internet of Things system yet. So you've got to consider with these systems how you interface into big back offices. Big back offices aren't really good at dealing with lots of micro requests. So much like Rob Tiffany's presentation yesterday, you find yourself layering caching and other technologies across the front of them. These little devices also have the one-wire protocol for sensors like this. This is a temperature sensor with a steel head, which you can pop in water and so forth up to about 120 degrees. Those sort of sensors are made by a company called Dallas, and they give you highly accurate temperature and humidity readings. One of my favorite sensors is this. Kids really get into driving a robot with a PlayStation controller. There's an adapter which goes in there, and you can wire it up to your device. We've got water flow sensors. These are really useful. I'm talking to the CPIT in Christchurch, and they were looking at plumbing up one of their new buildings with all of this gear. Much like dark fiber, it's a lot cheaper and easier to put in water flow, electricity usage sensors as the building's being built rather than retrospectively fit them. Great thing about these is they have some interesting uses. We were at Burnside High School in Christchurch at an IT show and tell, and this dad and son walked over and they started talking to us about this gear, and the kid's going, "Oh, come on, Dad, I want to go talk to the games programming companies." And for the next 15 minutes we had quite an animated chat with the dad. He was interested in the relays and the valves because he was a home brewer, and he was looking at a way to keep his batch plant going and keep it at the right temperature. Quite a few of these sensors implement custom protocols, and you end up bit bashing them out digital output ports and digital input ports. The problem with bit bashing on a Netduino or a NetMF platform is that there's a bit of lag with the VM. So there's one problem with the Netduino and associated devices. The ports are nowhere near as flexible. So I've spent quite a bit of time looking at circuit diagrams and modifying boards with pliers and jumpers to make them work on the Netduino platform. The Arduino people seem to change the designs every so often. The guy who founded the Arduino group, Massimo Banzai, just goes, "Oh yeah, we're going to add some more pins there." And that suddenly breaks all of my gear and I have to do more soldering and cutting. So we've got sensors for measuring temperature and humidity, this sort of thing. We've got air pressure, noise and dust. These dust sensors use an infrared beam. We're using those in Christchurch to look at the impact of the demolition of the buildings in the CBD and in the suburbs, the output of the log burners. Combining that data from smart inhalers from Nexus 6, we then should be in closest to real time be able to plot where people are having asthma problems and what the pollution levels are. We've got GPS units and gyroscopes. If any of you have built or got a quadcopter, the gyroscope that runs my quadcopter is about the size of my little fingernail. It gives me acceleration in three axes and rotation in three axes as well. You can get a 9150 device from Invensys, which has also got a compass in it, so you can get your quadcopter to return to base or fly in a more intuitive way. We build projects with this sort of device. It's a shield which sits on top of a Arduino or a Netduino, and then you plug in a wireless unit like this, and it's a remote control unit. There's a socket there where you can plug a Nokia 5110 screen, and it's actually a video game as well. The kids build their own PlayStation. So we've got flex and force and strain measuring equipment, and we've got ultrasonic ranges. One of the projects the kids build is a device like this, which is an ultrasonic ranger. So we'll plug this in and demo it working. So you'll see it's now booted up. You'll see as I move the sensor up and down. Whoops, don't reboot the device, Bryn. I pressed the reboot button. Here we go. You can see it's veering in and out. So the kids look at this and go, what's the use of this? And then you go, your mum and dad, they've got a modern car with a backing beeper. They go, yep, this is exactly that technology. So one of my other demos is a biometrics-based demo. These things really hurt if you've got a hairy arm. So we'll plug this in. So some of the kids were looking at this as a way of, oops, better unplug that, controlling a robot. I wrote the instructions on here, black, white, and red. So this device reads muscle impulses. I've got to keep still and not be tense as it boots because it's setting itself up. So you can see now, as I move my hand, it's reading muscle impulses from my arm. These sort of sensors are cheap as chips. This EMG sensor was $39.95. Now, I bring these in from China, from a company called Seed Studio. They're pretty good. You get stuff in within a couple of days. If any of you are interested, you can pop to my blog, which is in the final closing credits. These devices you can pick up and bring in. Seed is spelt with three E's, for those of you who are quickly surfing. And no, unlike Kirk, I haven't got a pineapple at the front of the room collecting all of your traffic. So, you've got these devices sitting in the field and they need to connect to stuff. They're not a lot of use sitting out in the middle of nowhere with no sensing capability. They need to be doing something useful, otherwise my boss won't pay me to build them. These devices have different connectivity capabilities. There's just too much stuff on the stage. We've got a wired LAN. Great thing about a wired LAN is you can push power down it as well. In the EPIC Centre in Christchurch, which is the EPIC Innovation, we're looking at putting some boxes around the building monitoring people and pollution levels and volatile organics from painting material and so forth. We've got cellular links. There's 2.5G, 3G and 4G and God knows what next. 2.5G is great, it's cheap as chips, but it's pretty heavy on power. You've got to be really careful if you want to solar power something which has a 2.5G modem. The older tech is also cheap. You pick a cellular modem up for $25-ish. US, maybe 30 on special. This is a cellular modem. It's got a SIMCOM 900 chipset on it, and it's on the Telecom. No, this one's on Voda. This one's on Voda. One of the projects the Code Club's kids do is My First Cell Phone. They send SMSs and build a keypad to drive it. So one of the popular standards is XB. These are expensive. An XB chip, which can be made to join a larger mesh network, is $40. It's about the same price as a cellular device. XB has got really low power consumption and quite low data rates, which is cool for the sort of applications I'm doing. The development is pretty painful, though. It uses a superset of the Hayes AT command set from the early days of modems. It's heinous to program. You have to have a fairly monster state machine to manage the error states and handle the retries and so forth. There are other devices which work in the ISM band, the industrial, scientific and medical bands. This is another project that we built for the electric car challenge that I'm involved in Christchurch. E-Velocity, the E-Velocity challenge is building electric cars, and kids are building these cars and instrumenting them. My specialist topic is Pimp My Cart. And if you can see on the screen there, that's the throttle position of the other one. And we've got an accelerometer on the front, and you can see the acceleration changing in the X, Y, and Z. My Pimp My Cart topic, we were looking at doing stability control, because these electric carts have got quite good low-down torque. Engine management with keyless go with an RFID tag reader. Tunes, using one of these devices. This is a MP3 player board, and we're looking at combining the MP3 player board with the throttle position and the current forward speed to simulate a noise. Electric vehicles have to have a noise, because it's a bit hard on blind people if you suddenly catch up with them. So this is an MP3 shield, plus a Netduino, plus a battery pack. There's a 2 gig SD card in there with music on it, and it just reads the music. One of the projects the Code Club kids do is put a user interface on that to do back, next, previous, volume up, volume down. These shields, the MP3 shield is $9.90 US. It's got a microphone input and a headphone output. We also use those for another gig I work on, for enunciating warnings and so forth. So we've got Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi works pretty well, unless it's your hot tub. Part of the problem with Wi-Fi is it's reasonably power hungry, both from a processor point of view and a energy point of view. There's a new chipset come out of China which you control via a serial port, which is looking quite promising, but the manual's in Chinese. So I'm talking to one of my co-workers about converting it to English so that I have a vague chance of understanding what is going on. So we've got this device here, which is a Fez Spider connected to the internet. And we'll go for camera two. So this device is just connected to the internet, and if I press the button, you'll see the light briefly go orange and then red, and then if I flip to my laptop and then tab to the browser, you'll see that the last update was an hour ago, and we now have a few seconds ago. With its joystick, I can move the values around. Previous years I've been taken out by the ropey comms in these rooms, but this time we're looking a lot better. The vendor of this system has started blocking me because I've made too much traffic, and I'm guessing that's what's happened here. It's also, oh no, here we go, it's finally got around to it. So you'll see I've now changed the values there. The wired LAN is great, you've got plenty of bandwidth too, which is good because you can put a slow scan serial camera on those devices. So we've got some protocols. You've got basic TCP. You can open a connection to a host, squawk a few bytes or ASCII characters at the host, and then shut up and go back to sleep. It's great, but it's not terribly standard. You've got HTTP and HTTPS. HTTP is good, but it's pretty chunky. I've done some fairly unnatural things to reduce the size of the message by getting rid of the payload, removing all of the server headers, removing any unnecessary client headers, and shoving the values into the actual HTTP headers. It's pretty nasty, but sometimes you've got to do it. It's on a device-by-device basis, it doesn't matter much, but you visualize a million devices, each reporting an extra 100 characters, you're going to be having a fairly good chat with your cellco about that sort of traffic. HTTPS, it's the bane of my existence on these devices. On the Fez Spider devices, you have to fire up IE, navigate to the endpoint that you want to access from your Fez Spider. You've got to do it in administrative mode. Select it, click on the green logo, choose the root certificate, export it, and then take that exported text file and bind it into your app as a resource. There are no revocation lists and no certificate store. About 6 months ago, Microsoft changed the root certificates for Azure. They went from like GTE to Baltimore ones, and that pained me a lot, because I had to basically revisit every device and reprovision it with new certificates. We've got MQTT, Message Queue Telemetry Transfer. This is like ESBs for devices. You've got a pub/sub model, quality of service. It's the back end for Facebook's IM product. It's pretty cool and it works really well. Had some problems in the first couple of iterations. It was totally unsecure. Your passwords went past in clear text. Later versions now work over SSL and other technologies, so you can see what's going on. There's AMQP, which is the basis of RabbitMQ. So if any of you are using that sort of technology, it's also the basis of Azure Service Bus. And if we get some time, I've got a demo which uploads data into the Azure Service Bus. For a more IM sort of spin, there's XMPP IoT. So the people who did the protocol that runs Jabber have done a version with shorter headers and binary data to make it more applicable to embedded platforms. Part of the problem is a lot of these protocols rely on HTTPS. So WebSockets, XSockets, and SignalR, if you want to secure them, need to be run over sockets. And the problem is you've got a certificate which has a valid from and a valid to date. And if your device doesn't have a real-time clock, it forgets the time every time you shut it down. So when you start up, you have to go to an NTP server, get the time, and initiate a request. A call from one of these devices to Zively, the service I use, which is HTTP call, takes hundreds of milliseconds. A call to the Azure Service Bus, because of all of the other negotiation of tickety-wicketies and things like that, takes closer to 6, which is somewhat worrying. I've got to sit down and debug it. You can actually insert Fiddler between these devices and the internet so you can see what's going on and have a poke around and simulate requests and stuff. It's really good. So I've played around with WebSockets and SignalR on these devices, and it works pretty reliably. So crypto, SSL, stopping me boiling your spar pool. Problem is, if you haven't got a lot of CPU, what can you do? There are lightweight protocols like XTEA, Extended Tiny Encryption Algorithm, and there are versions of this available for both the devices and the back office. How many of you have heard of the Legion of the Bouncy Castle? They have a bunch of C-sharp libraries for most of the common encryption algorithms, and with some carefully considered bodging, you can make them run on the .NET micro framework. I've got versions of XTEA running on those devices and up in the cloud. You've got problems with PKI establishing trust. You've got to distribute your certificates and manage manually the revocation process. If you're going to be doing your own block or stream-based ciphers for securing stuff, you need to be able to store your secrets on the device, and that's where you need some tamper-resistant hardware. Do not rely on security by obscurity. Do not underestimate how determined I will be if I need to get the data out of your device. One customer I worked with, their competitor had shaved the top off some of their chips to try and figure out what they were under the covers because they bought them without branding. It's important that you both securely store them securely and then disseminate them securely as well. These tamper-resistant modules are not cheap, but are well worth considering if you've got some data that you really need to keep private, both from an intellectual property or data business. The Sensing City people are looking at Creative Commons in all of the data so that you can fill your boots. You can arrive at our website and get all of the stuff that you want, download it, and then discover new and interesting insights from it. Part of the problem there is what happens if that data's been tampered with. So how many of you have heard that in Iraq, the Syrian, the the Islamic State had seized about 40 kgs of radioactive materials from a university. Imagine how much damage to the, say, American financial markets a fake dirty bomb attack in downtown New York would cost. These devices, you can buy them with a Geiger counter, and they've deployed quite a lot of these with Geiger counters for the process of, for detecting dirty bomb attacks or those sort of attacks. So we've got some applications. We've got real-time telemetry, which is the electric cart thing. My daughter, this is the Princess sensor. It's a solar panel powered temperature sensor. She doesn't like swimming in the school pool on cold days. So on a cold day, we can engage strategic incompetence and leave our togs at home. The Reese, my son, was going, "Oh, but everyone will be using it then and I'll have to swim by myself." This plugs into the LAN and connects over a wireless link. It works pretty well. I've just got to make it sleep a wee bit more aggressively, because if you get a couple of dark days in a row, it dies. How many of you went to the presentation where the presenter had a pulse rate monitor on? Right, this is my pulse rate monitor. You shouldn't really be competitive about how high your pulse rate is, so I'm sort of hoping that I'm fairly chilled. So this device is a pulse rate monitor. There we go. So you'll see it's powered up. The green flashing LED is my heartbeat. And in 15 seconds, it will display my pulse. The other presenter's pulse was about 130 beats a minute. My standing pulse rate is 72 beats a minute. Please display something. Please. What is my pulse rate? I can't see it from this angle. 124, so I'm 7 better than the other guy. It's only 50 more than usual. I'm not panicking. I was petrified the amount of gear I had up on the stage. So the other demo. So one of the projects that Code Club, we built at Code Club, is a power monitor. So Ed, this demo's for you. This device, just make sure I've got it the right way up. Wake up. There we go, whoops. Is that still visible? So, turn it on, plug it in. One of the girls in Code Club, who's a bit of a dark horse, she wrote this largely by herself. It samples the AC waveform using a current clamp in the box here. Local company built these for us. I went down and saw them and said, "Look, I'm teaching kids how to program," and showed them my engineering prototype, which was a PC cable with the insulation carefully split and the phase wire pulled out. And they went, that's not a good look for teaching children. How about we build you some boxes? And TARDIS, who you can contact at 0508 827 347, built us these boxes. We've done pretty well in Code Club. Quite a few companies have given us cash and donated their time. Orion Health in Christchurch were kind enough to lend us their premises for several weeks, and we had a we bought 300 pizzas in one term. I am so sick of Domino's $5 value pizzas. I used to go across the road to the Subway so I could avoid eating them. So, the whole thing is that inspire you to do some epic shit. Have some fun. The code base I work on is 160,000 lines of C#. It does my head in. It takes you several months to come to understand it. These apps are all pretty small and contained. There's a kinesthetic element to it as you plug and unplug the sensors. It doesn't cost you too much to get started. The finance committee will approve $25. The finance committee approves $60. The finance committee doesn't know about the PayPal account. Microsoft will be a player. It's just too big to ignore. One of the Microsoft VPs said, a sensor in every chicken in every pot, which is a sort of an extension on a quote by Henry IV from the 1600s in France. And that's the whole thing. Once this platform becomes ubiquitous, the volumes of data that are going to need to be processed in the cloud are going to be phenomenal. Open standards. You must play nice with others. All of these systems will need to interoperate. Embrace standards fully. Deliver these standards completely, and everything will be better for all of us. I find it much easier with my devices when I'm trying to connect to a back office which implements the standards nicely. So, what is all this gear good for? I run a code club. I ran two code clubs for a term, it just about killed me. We have a global initiative going on. We teach Scratch and Python to primary and intermediate school kids to get them started. We then teach Visual Studio, C Sharp, and NetDuino to high school kids the age of 9 and 13. We're going for a national launch at the IITP conference in October. We're looking for companies to foster students from local schools. We have prepackaged materials. If any of you are interested, send an email to team@codeclub.co.nz or have a look at our Twitter feed at codeclubnz. We're looking at establishing hundreds of clubs the length and breadth of New Zealand. For me, it's restoring my karma. I've worked on cigarette vending machines. Smoke, choke, croak was the advertising message. The boss wasn't so impressed when he showed it to the customer. I've worked on short-term cash loans. I work on an alcohol promotion system. I need to restore my karma somehow. Code Club is great. It's the young woman who made the power monitor. You could see that she joined the dots at the end. She had this epiphany and went, I can do this stuff. And we need people to do this stuff because I'm not getting any younger. I entered the industry in 1988 and started writing code on a PDP 11 with RSX 11. My first PC was a 10 megahertz Turbo AT. I've most probably got another 10 years in me, so we need to make sure that there are replacements coming along. So, all of the related content is pointless because it's Friday. And they've all gone. But you should be able to find them online. I've got my blog, my Twitter handle. Have a look at Code Club. The website should be up. It's like a builder's house. Our website is pants currently. It should be along shortly. Just catch me up in the street. I didn't get any swag, so you've lucked out. So, any questions? Complete your session evals, and thank you very much for coming.